It is a Tech Today Wednesday on Giant FM. I welcome Bob Carmody in studio. And Bob, I want to let you know that on this date in 1848, there was something that received its patent that I used to have a lot more as a kid because my mom would do it than I have nowadays. In fact, I don't even own one of these, but now I want to run right out and get one. Can you guess what it might be?
I'd probably get in trouble if I did.
In 1848, an early U.S. patent was given to a man by the name of William Young in Baltimore for an ice cream freezer. Homemade ice cream. I don't even have one. Do you?
No, I don't.
I haven't had one in years.
I do have my grandmother's recipe.
I've got one from my mom. I just haven't used it.
Okay, so... do you use the Junkit tablets?
Yes.
Yeah, we do too. Yeah.
And I gather those and a lot are of people still don't. For sale at
you can
your
go
average
to Mickey,
market.
You can go to Mickey's T-Mart and buy all the Junkit tablets you want. Yeah.
I don't know how many I need.
I do it about every year. But yeah, that's fun to do, I think. And it's a different taste, isn't it?
Oh, it's a much different taste. Now, I'm also one, though, that after it's made... I want it to set up for a while.
And get hard?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I naturally, I'm like everybody else. Quick, give me a bowl. Yeah, I want a bowl of homemade ice cream, but it's better after it's set up. And you kind of end up every now and then, if you don't keep it stirred really, really, really well, like there's one river current of it where it's really, really rich, uh-huh. Another part where it's not so much. I like that.
That's okay. Yeah, I like that. Yeah. Gives it a little variety.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some people go ahead and they put strawberries in their ice cream and all this. We don't do that.
No.
We just take it straight vanilla.
And I've got family members, and my dad's one of them, who used to take the Hershey's.
Uh-huh.
And he'd pour so much in a bowl that it looked like it was dug chocolate out of the field nearby. I mean, it was, ooh.
Yeah.
Why bother?
Yeah, and then some people put butterscotch on or... Do you say caramel or caramel?
I say caramel, and yeah, I know I'm probably wrong, but
Midwest,
I say caramel.
We say caramel, yeah. So anyway.
And my mom got to where, though, she changed things. And I'll give you a quick story on my mom and cooking, especially with my dad. And my mom's a terrific cook, don't get me wrong, from side things like ice cream to meals. I mean, no complaints about mom, except for the fact that she lies. And she can't help herself. Because she'll change something, it'll be in a meal, or and since we're talking about ice cream, she started using Jell-O pudding as a part of the mix in with it, and especially
my
dad.
And you can tell the difference?
Oh, yeah. And my dad, whatever it might be, and this has happened lots of times over the years, my dad will go, this isn't quite right. And he didn't mean it was good or bad. He just goes,
it's different.
This isn't what we've had before. Oh, it's the same thing I've always made. I didn't change anything. Well, except for this. She can't help herself. She lies when she changes things in the menu. And then she can't help but tell you the truth as well, because she's not going to fool my dad. Went a little too far with the Jell-O pudding, though.
You know, it's a fond memory that I have of making homemade ice cream on the back porch on West Jackson Street. And I had two older brothers, and so back then I had to crank it by hand.
Yep.
And, the more you cranked, the harder it got.
Yes.
Well, as a kid, I didn't know that because I always cranked it they always made me do it at last. And so,
And were you trying to go as fast as you could?
Well, I think, man, those guys really are a lot stronger than I am. Man, this is hard to do. And my arm's getting more tired because this is getting even harder to do, and they were laughing.
My favorite thing to do, though, was...
Well, you were the oldest, right?
Yeah, I'm the oldest.
So did you toy with your younger siblings?
A little. Although my youngest brother was 13 years younger, so I was pretty much out of the house by the time it would have been allowed to beat up on him.
Yeah, well, I got beat up. Oh, yeah. Anyway, so that's the kind of stuff they do to you. But we'd sit out on the wine. Then when you got done cranking it, you had to pack it.
Yes.
And that was the longest hour of the whole summer,
mm-hmm.
right? Waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting until you could eat the ice cream. So then you'd eat the ice cream. By that time, it was dark, and you'd look at stars. And Pop was a pilot in World War II, and so he had a fair amount of training in celestial navigation. And he would point things out to us. And we always started with the North Star, the Big Dipper, and then the Little Dipper, because they're all connected. The North Star is the first star in the handle of the Little Dipper. So if you can find the North Star, you can find the Little Dipper. Furthermore, the Big Dipper, the last two stars in the cup of the Big Dipper point straight to the North Star. Mm-hmm. And the Big Dipper rotates around the North Star completely around at 360 degrees every day. And so that was always the starting point. And from there it was the Summer Triangle and Vega, Altar, Deneb, and the Northern Cross and all those good things. That's fun event in summertime. Go out and make some ice cream. But do you know how much an ice cream maker costs?
No clue. You mean runs on its own, or you got to spin it? Can you even buy one? You got to turn yourself anymore?
Yes, you can. But they're over $100.
Are you serious?
I couldn't believe it. Yeah,
because I was actually thinking about going and getting one after I read that today.
I was too, and I got online. This has been a couple of years ago, and I got online to start looking at that stuff. I couldn't believe how expensive those things are. So you have like white cedar ice cream makers, all that stuff, you know.
Well, then it better create the mix and make the ice cream itself, because I don't want to work.
No, that's the part you want to do. That way you make sure you get it right. And you can follow Mamaw's recipe. It's a family tradition, right? But don't do it without the junket tablets.
No, I agree.
There's a lot of people who don't know.
That little square box.
The little square box with that little bitty pill, and you throw that in there, and it keeps it soft.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They use that, I guess, a lot in custards.
Oh, okay. Sure.
Yeah. So, but how many people do you know that make their own custard?
I've never known anybody that made custard.
Yeah, who do you know? So there just aren't as many people who cook like they used to. But, oh, yeah. Homemade ice cream. See, now you got me in a mood to want to go. This is kind of like you end up spending $280 on a bowl of ice cream that you could have gone out to Dairy Queen and got for $250.
No, right? You can't get much of anything at Dairy Queen for $250.
Whatever. Okay, you get my point.
I do.
But at least, see, then it's bad on your profit and loss statement, but it does add to your balance sheet, right? you got the new ice cream maker on your balance sheet, so your assets go up. Anyway, so while you're doing all that, while you're out making your ice cream and looking at the stars, the International Space Station is going to fly over tomorrow night at 11:27 p.m. for just a 2-minute flyover. And then on Friday at 10:34 p.m., a 3-minute flyover, and then Saturday at 9:41, a 2-minute flyover. The best one coming up is on Sunday evening at 10:26 p.m. is a 4-minute flyover, and then Monday 9:34 and Tuesday at 10:18 are 3-minute flyovers. So get out. Go look at some stars.
Can I give you the dumb headline of the day? It's not even, I think, really a story as much as it is just the headline. A game pitched as a school shooting simulation. That's how it's written on the game itself. Has been ditched from somebody called Steam's online store ahead of its release.
Yeah, gee, there's a lot of...
Way to go, PR. You caught that just in time before it got out on the market.
They were talking about that on the news this morning.
I don't think we should release that. That might not go well. You think so?
But why would you ever think that it would make sense to even produce it
in
the first place?
No, I have no idea.
Do you think that all of this gun violence, okay, is due in part to video game violence.
Oh, man, we're delving into... Do you make that connection? No. And here's why. Are kids desensitized by it? Certainly they are. Kids who are 11 and 12, and I have a couple of sons in that range, will and do see things that I didn't get to see when I was 11 and 12 in 1982. I know that. That's absolutely true. But I'm more of one to think that each school shooting itself begats another consideration of a school shooting,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the video game doing it. I just...
See, to me,
I have trouble delving into that because I think people, unless there is a true mental stability issue, it's on them for the decision they made, not because of what they watched. I could have watched Bugs Bunny, for instance, and decided to take up smoking. And I know I'm being a little literal here, but if you go back to the old cartoons before they edited out the smoking, Bugs would be in a Western cartoon
smoking
and he'd be smoking a cigarette, and I could have started smoking from that. I still made the decision to start smoking. Bugs Bunny didn't do it for me. I know the games are unique and offer perspectives that no video saw.
I come in on a little different. So I think they have an impact. I think that this whole culture of violence is in part, and we can always disagree on how much.
I don't know how we pick the percentages.
I don't think you can, but it is due in part to all these violent games that these kids are watching. I mean, the statistic that I saw, it's been some time ago now, but by the time a person turns 12, they've seen something like over 10,000 murders on TV. It was a phenomenal statistic. And so the idea is that whole culture drives itself. I don't know. It's, to me, it's part of the ills of society today. But anyway, so some idiot somewhere says, hey, I got a good idea. Let's make a new video game that's about a school shooter.
Yeah, why didn't end in production? Why
exactly.
did it end just before it got released?
How could...
It almost made it to the market.
I know. How could you be that stupid to think that? Oh, well, anyway. Did you hear about Alan Bean? Alan Bean died this past weekend. He was on the Apollo 12 mission.
Mm-hmm, I recall.
Walked on the moon. He was the commander of the second Skylab crew also back in the 70s. And after that, after he was an astronaut for 18 years, and then he finally resigned, and he spent the rest of his life painting. Was an artist. And he was the lunar module pilot on the November 1969 Apollo 12 flight. Okay, so in July, Armstrong and Aldrin land on the moon, first people on the moon, and then he was second moon landing. So another example of nobody remembers second place. Like, who came in second in the Indy 500 this year?
Ed Carpenter.
We'll remember that for probably about another 2 weeks.
It helps that he was on the pole, so you can tie those two things together, but
It won't last long. You remember on Southeastern Avenue, that glass store, it had the race car up above it?
Oh, sure.
Okay, and that car sat there. It was an old Roadster that probably had a Novi engine in it at one time. What was the number on that car?
General Lee's 01. I don't know.
95.
95.
Okay. It was car 95. And so I got on. This is what's so great about the internet today. So I get on the internet, and I start searching, and I find out that car finished second in the 1956 Indianapolis 500.
And it ends up above a glass door on Southeastern.
Which now it's gone, okay? And I'm told that they're restoring it. It's being restored.
To go back there or to go someplace else?
Oh, I think to go in the Speedway Museum, I guess. But anyway. So Alan Bean was the lunar module pilot on Apollo 12. And that, again, that was the second moon landing. And he was the mission commander with Pete Conrad that explored on the lunar ocean of storms, that area on the moon, the lunar ocean of storms. And they set up a number of experiments that were powered by a small nuclear generator, probably still going strong up there. So he passed away this last weekend. He in one interview, he talked about what it was like to walk on the moon and how the gravity on the moon is 1/6 the gravity of Earth. So if you weigh 150 pounds on Earth, you would weigh 25 pounds on the moon. And he talked a lot about, in this one particular interview, he talked about how it's a totally different way of moving. You train your body to move differently. He talked about how he walked on his tiptoes, mm-hmm. is how he walked. So anyway, Alan Bean.
It's a jaunty trip along the moon.
Yes.
Can you bounce yourself off the moon? Was there ever any concern that you could be hit with such a force that maybe you could get knocked off the moon? I don't think so. There's enough gravity to keep you in place.
If you got in a cannon and were shot out of the cannon, would you escape the orbit of the moon? Would you escape the gravity of the moon and go into lunar orbit? Yeah, don't know. I bet you wouldn't survive the blast.
Let's call our NASA scientists and ask that question.
Yeah, let's call NASA and ask that. Yeah, good idea. Researchers predict materials to stabilize record high capacity lithium ion batteries. Did you hear about this? Northwestern University, Chicago.
Oh, our good friends from the Big Ten.
Yes, the research team has found a new way to stabilize lithium ion battery with a record high charge capacity. And it's based on a lithium manganese oxide cathode. So remember the anode and the cathode.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And this is like galvanic action, or remember Porsche. I don't know if they still do this or not, but they used to galvanize their bodies. They'd weld up the body, and then they'd run it through a tank of molten zinc and galvanize the body.
That sounds really cool.
Or cathodic protection, which is on a lot of bridges, even on Batesville caskets. So you have an anode and a cathode, and the cathode is the magnesium bar underneath, and it's wired to the casket so that if it ever starts to corrode, magnesium, I guess they are ions, would be traveling through the solution, the water, and plate the casket to retard corrosion.
Anyway, I won't know what's happening, but okay.
So in the battery, you have the anode and the cathode, right? And the electrode in this particular battery... Excuse me. Allergies bothering you today?
No, I don't have allergies.
You do. You just don't
know. I do not.
Anyway, the battery electrode has a composition that's a metal oxide-based composition. And lithium-ion batteries work by, they shuttle the lithium ions back and forth between the anode and the cathode, okay? And the cathode is made from a compound that uses the lithium ions in combination with a metal, okay, could be chromium or cobalt or whatever, but a metal and oxygen. And so this metal typically is cobalt, but the cathode effectively stores and releases the energy when the lithium ions move from the anode to the cathode and back. And so this new battery is a quantum leap in the storage capacity. And it's an interesting story because I think it, what it means is that if perfected, and that's a big if probably, but these results they say are very promising, but if or when it's perfected, then things like cell phones and laptops, et cetera, these battery-powered devices that we have will have the battery life at a minimum doubled. So that's pretty good. So can you go a whole day with your cell phone without a charge?
If I don't use it much, my phone battery is not much.
Yeah.
Not impressive.
Well, and the older the phone gets, the weaker the battery is. Mm-hmm. Or they make it weaker by some secret coded message from Apple to diminish the function of your device. They got caught doing that, didn't they?
I don't play with that proprietary nonsense of Apple. Oh, no, 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 no. You can keep your iPhone. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So I just feel like this is another example or another story in a long line of stories about battery technology and how we're perfecting that and how this could have big, big impact on our lives, particularly when you think about doubling the capacity of a battery for, say, example, an electric car. So all of a sudden you get into the 400 and 500 mile range on a charge. Now you're looking at really having a car that would serve 98% of everybody's needs.
We'll see how big those electric cars can get to be on the market. I've yet to buy one. I've yet to look at one. It's not a reality for me yet.